I want to thank you for being here this morning. I'm very excited about our speaker this morning. You should know, I'm a little embarrassed to say this. In around 1983, darn close to 30 years ago, I met our speaker this morning. And I say I'm a little embarrassed because some of you are thinking in your head, 1983, I wasn't born then. I was a graduate student at the University of Washington in 1983. And Bill Friedrich was my advisor, my mentor, wonderful man, very interested in child abuse, very interested in sexual abuse. And he said, I needed to go to this meeting because there's this lady who was putting together this meeting that was happening. I don't remember if it was once a month or once a week, but this was a regular meeting, and I needed to go with him. And so on some day, he jumped in my car. Little did I know that he was just the craziest driver in the whole wide world. And he was driving frantically. So I arrived at Harborview Medical Center on the edge of my seat because he was, it seemed like he was driving at 70 miles an hour down side streets. Walked into the Harborview, and I met this lady who was rather small and slight, but she pretty much commanded the room. And she was full of energy. She was very powerful. And from that point on, pretty much any time I had the opportunity to listen to her talk, whether it was in a group or a committee, or listening to her talk as part of a conference and as a speaker, I always took that chance because she was very engaging. She knows a lot about the field that we work in, not just the research, which she absolutely does know, but she's also a clinician. She sees, at least for the last 30 years, clients on a regular basis, treating them, child clients. She knows an awful lot about a lot of the interventions that are currently being used today, a lot of the CBTs and PCITs and triple Ps and all the initials that you can think of, because that's what she's been doing, because she's been a leader in the field of child maltreatment. Actually, if you go into Harborview Medical Center and to the Center for Sexual Assault and Traumatic Stress, there's a picture of her with Ronald Reagan. This is Ronald Reagan, right? Who is that? Jimmy Carter? Truman? Bill Clinton, she says. I'm just going to keep going until I hit Roosevelt. Because she received a presidential award for her work in the field of child maltreatment. And it's very impressive. And so I'm very, very pleased to introduce you to Lucy Berliner, who will be our speaker this morning. We asked her to talk about pretty much anything she wanted to, and the title of her talk is PCIT in Context, Evidence-Based Practices for the Future. So here's Lucy Berliner.
Good morning. I've been trying to figure out actually why I'm here, given that I don't do PCIT. I've never actually done PCIT. I never will do PCIT. It's too dang hard. And I don't even like little kids that much. Relatives accepted. Only immediate relatives, actually, I've realized. So it really is entirely Anthony. And if somebody got up and said all those nice things about you, you'd probably do whatever he said, too. Now, he didn't really go into the high point of our mutual publication career, since we're trying to desperately to find a copy of this article so that we could actually have it removed entirely from the canon, because it probably was written in 1985 or something, and it describes, in case you ever run across it, a therapy group that Anthony and I did with sexually abused boys. And I really think that, I don't think we were really quite on the track right then, since it was total chaos. And as Anthony pointed out to me recently, it probably didn't help that we thought we would offer some snacks to the children that involved, at that point in time, Coca-Cola and potato chips. And we realize you guys have kind of come far from that. I hope that this is why Anthony asked me to come, because this is what I'm going to talk about, and it'll be awkward if we're kind of off sync completely. But to talk about PCIT as an illustration or an example within the larger context of the evidence-based practice approach that is going to be the, I would say, the framework for public policy and support for services in public mental health, as well as in a few other related arenas, and I'm sure you're kind of familiar with this, in child welfare system. I mean, the current commissioner of ACF, Brian Samuels, in Washington, D.C., has made very clear, in a very neat way, that child welfare interventions should not just be about safety and permanency. They should also be about child well-being, and he specifically calls out the importance of making sure that kids and families in the child welfare system have access to evidence-based psychosocial interventions. In juvenile justice, they're already way on board about this, because they discovered that the traditional types of interventions didn't really work for reducing juvenile delinquency, which is really the only outcome anyone cares about in the criminal justice system. And lots of kids, high-risk offenders, reoffend quite quickly. It's very expensive to deal with kids in the criminal justice system, and there's a direct and immediate cost to the community in terms of new victimization. So the juvenile justice system is far ahead of mental health and child welfare in committing to, if we're going to have rehabilitation as part of our mission, then we ought to make sure that the services are ones that actually work. So I do want to start with giving credit to the awesomeness of PCIT, and I know you're all here because you think it's awesome, and I have to say I think it's pretty awesome too. Mostly I would say the thing that makes me think it's awesome is you guys. It's the people who do PCIT, because there's something about the people. They're like the nicest people ever, and I'm really not. So it's really good for me to spend time around the PCIT people, because PCIT people generally live it, breathe it, are it. And Naomi Perry, our wonderful PCIT leader person in our clinic who's here, you know, I mean, it's a very good antidote to somebody like me to have someone who's really nice and focuses on the positives. I would say all of the gang that I know, Nancy and Susan and Anthony, and it's just so nice to be around people who are nice. And you can just totally see how the principles that underlie PCIT are going to be nothing but good for children in terms of the modeling that the clinical people and the training people are doing for families, that it's the heart of it is so well reflected in the people who choose to do PCIT. So you're awesome. But I do want to sort of, now I'm going to go in another little bit of a direction in terms of putting PCIT in a larger context out there in the evidence-based world. PCIT is in a family of interventions, generally thought of as parent management training type interventions, and there's a lot of them. Of all the problems, clinical problems that kids and families end up in mental health services for, we probably have the best developed body of literature and intervention approaches for behavior problems, which of course is what PCIT was invented for. It was designed to address kids who had behavior problems. And it's quite a, in some ways, a luxury that we have so many of these interventions, because if you look at the clinical epidemiology of public mental health, maybe 15 to 20% of kids coming for care are coming because of a, where the chief complaint is a behavior problem. So anxiety and depression are equally common mental health problems that kids have that they end up seeking services for. And you can't really name as many programs when you get over into anxiety and depression, because we have in the parent management training, of course, we have the sort of the grand, I don't know, would you call it grandfather, grandparent? Oregon, social learning, parent PMTO, which is Parent Management Training Oregon, and that's Jerry Patterson and Patty Chamberlain and that crowd up there who talk about old. Those people are really old, and they started writing about this a really long time ago. And it's, you can go right back and read some of the books, and they're just as right on and capture exactly what we see today. And of course, there's the whole Incredible Years, you know, line of research. Carolyn Webster Stratton, who's up at the UW, and she's got quite the operation going there, and empirical support for that approach. And you have Rex Forehand and Bob McMahon's Helping the Noncompliant Child, and Russell Barkley's version of parent management training. So, you know, we have a, you know, we've got a luxury in the sense of lots of options when you get to programs addressing behavior problems. I mean, how many people could name a brand name for a program addressing anxiety or depression? Coping Cat, you don't see a lot of table pounding for Coping Cat, even though that's a very well-established, very effective intervention for anxiety. When you go out and see people wanting something, you know, it's more likely to be, well, the two big winners are PCIT and trauma-focused CBT, right, that have really taken hold and are very well-known. And, of course, TFCBT is for post-traumatic stress, which is a special kind of anxiety. So we have a really neat situation with all these accumulated interventions. And of course, you know, there's a good reason why we have so many of them in the areas, because we have broad agreement about the, you know, about how you change behavior problems in kids. There's not a lot of disagreement or dispute or differences of opinion. So all of these programs are really basically based on the exact same theory about how you change behavior problems through enhancing parental responsiveness to kids and consistency. And they're all parent, either fully or partially parent-mediated. You know, we get to the little kids and the kids, and it's all the parents. And even some of the interventions, like Triple P, basically doesn't bring the kids into it at all, ever. Their whole adolescent version is strictly parent-mediated. So that's kind of the signature, I'd say, characteristic, is that the focus is on the parents and helping them respond to their children in a better way. And, of course, when you look in the box, which I do, I have a lot of different manuals in my office, and it turns out that the box pretty much looks very, very similar once you look in it in terms of what do people really actually do in these interventions. And the variations on the theme are not really all that significant. There's a little bit around the edges, but by and large, they're versions of the same thing. And this is sort of good and bad. I mean, it probably explains why they all work pretty well, but it can lead to people getting kind of hung up on a detail about the specific way you do this or that. Even though you're trying to get to the exact same thing. And I have to say, I did have a funny experience a couple of years ago where I was taking taking a training in a modular approach called MATCH, and the behavior problem element of it, it's Barclay's version, I think. And they've got a couple of very smart young gals from Harvard, because they work with John Weiss, who's the one of the top guys in studying child mental health services. And they were teaching their way of giving an instruction, since all of these programs teach parents to be effective in giving instruction. And I have to say, this just goes to show I know nothing, because I can't really remember which way it was, and I'm sure you'll be the first to correct me about the proper way to do it, but they were saying, okay, now what you do is you count to five under your breath. See, you can see I'm going wrong here already before you do it. And I sort of raised my hand and said, well, but isn't that different from what they do in PCIT? Don't they count to three and do it out loud or something? So I don't really know which is the right way. But the point is, these very smart young gals from Harvard got up and tried to give us a lecture about how that really was a very significant difference, and that it fundamentally mattered whether you counted out loud or not, and whether you counted to three versus five. Now, that's silly. That can't really be really true. That the big thing distinguishing these two interventions is out loud or not, and when in fact the real reason for that, as I would understand it, is put the kid on notice that they have to obey and give them a little bit of a time to get going. And this business of getting bogged down on the little detail is actually quite a problem for a lot of learners, because what they don't They lose sight, because the leaders aren't making clear that the function of the component or the intervention, because they're so intent on their particular version of it, so that a person who doesn't have a lot of experience or grounding might really actually believe that that is going to make or break the thing. So I guess I really want to make the point. I'm certified in Triple P, as is Naomi, and you know it's very instructive to take some of these other classes to learn a little bit about how each one works and the little variations around the edges, and that they all kind of seem like they're on the right track to get to the same end goal. So what really makes PCIT as special as it is? And I'm going to acknowledge that PCIT is quite special. It would be foolish of me not to, given the audience. I would say that the actual thing that PCIT really does that is actually quite different is the delivery method, which is basically the live coaching. In the moment, coaching the parent to do the behavior at the time. And even though most of the other programs, as I mentioned, they're parent mediated, they get the fact that it's not the kid, you're not taking the kid in the room and saying, hey, shape up. You're helping the parent do a better job of getting the kid to shape up. None of the other interventions actually have as a core ingredient of their delivery the live in the moment coaching. So that is quite an advantage, I think. I mean, I think from a teaching method, it certainly sounds like that should actually be a better teaching approach. There's a little bit of bogged downness that goes on around this, and it's certainly something that we have encountered because we're very involved in disseminating evidence-based interventions into public mental health. And probably many of those of you may have run into this barrier, because the very first thing that happens is people get hung up on the equipment as opposed to the idea, just like the counting. The idea is probably what is meaningful, not whether or not you have the observation room and the special bug in the ear. And particularly, I don't really like those bug in the ear, because how do I find out about it? There's one missing, and it's $600. So, when we try to live up to Davis, all it's just nothing but money. So that could be actually quite a barrier for adoption when people hear, well, in order to have PCIT, we have to spend $15,000, $20,000 getting the room and the equipment and the this, that, and the other thing, which, as Anthony will tell you, our common mentor, Bill Friedrich, was doing PCIT basically in the room with the kids sitting behind the parent. Because he knew what the real idea was. He wasn't focused on the equipment and the mechanics of it. but so I do think that this is a unique contribution of PCIT that seems right to me, and certainly when we try to actually bring this idea into our training with the non-brand name parent management training things, is to the extent possible, can we have the parent practice it with the kid in the room? Not necessarily using your same methodology, but the idea of it. Now, one of the questions you might ask is, given this, well, what do we know about whether any, one of these programs is better than the other or works better? And I would say it's an interesting situation because we really have almost no studies that have said, well, if we took triple P and compared that to incredible years, which would one work better than the other? And for good reason, that seems like that might not be a very useful thing to study because you have two already effective interventions. On the other hand, that is what people are going to be required to do nowadays. You can't go around comparing an effective intervention that everyone agrees is effective and to something that everyone thinks isn't, because even scientists think that you shouldn't withhold effective interventions from people. But I haven't been able to, maybe you guys know more about this, but this is the only study I could find that was actually comparing two parent management interventions, both of which are considered to be effective, was this study. And it's essentially comparing effect sizes because both PCIT and triple P have a lot of studies compared to others of these interventions. So meaning comparing how well does it work? Does it work really well or somewhat well? Overall, it turns out it's not a clear picture that, well, PCIT always trumps triple P. Because it turns out that certain versions of triple P do about as well as PCIT. PCIT has somewhat larger effect sizes for certain versions of it. So I would say that from the science perspective, we really can't say that one of these parent management trainings actually is better than another and is the one that ought to be chosen. So I would say, in some ways, that is that's great news. Now, going from the original purpose of all of these parent management programs, which were designed for kids with behavior problems that parents brought in and said, fix my kid, one of the really neat things that PCIT has been a big leader on and really has made, I think, a huge impact on public policy in the service area comes right out of an article that Anthony and Cheryl McNeil wrote quite a long time ago there, dude. And this is a really, it was actually the first year of the Child Maltreatment, which is the peer-reviewed journal for the American Professional Society on the Abuse of Children. And it was a thought piece in which they made an argument for why PCIT would be a really neat match for child welfare families, particularly families that were physically abusing their children. And that was novel. That had not been proposed or considered at all. And of course, I think that's because Anthony and Cheryl, cared about and were familiar with what the kids and families in the child welfare system and the problems and needs they had. I mean, you know what the standard approach to the parenting problems has been in child welfare and still is. Those classes that everybody goes to and has all those certificates for that nobody believes that make any difference at all. And so really, I think you have to, I mean, your fearless leader here is really responsible for putting out there the idea that PCIT, or you might an evidence-based parent management training program, would be a really valuable thing to make available to child welfare families. And that point is even truer now, I think, because we now recognize that the child welfare system, basically that's the government coming into people's lives uninvited and telling people they have to do certain things or we'll take your kids away from you. I mean, to make it, you know, so if we're going to be doing that, we better darn well be offering them services that we actually know work for them. We are, in fact, just in the middle of producing through APSAC a report that was going to call the evidence-based service planning. So a guide for child welfare to encourage them about why evidence-based practices and evidence-based principles ought to be the watchword for that child welfare families, because the stakes are so darn high and the context is not voluntary. So this was a really impressive idea. And it's really interesting to think about, well, why did PCIT catch on in child welfare so well? And I think that a really good part of that, just my own thought about why it caught on so well, was the delivery method. The idea of, and not just the live coaching, but the absolute requirement that you can't get to the discipline part until you've achieved mastery on the CDI, or the enhancement of parental closeness and warmth and selective attention types of skills. And you know probably very well, what do parents come in wanting when they're looking for help for a kid with a behavior problem? Tell me how to make this kid do what he's told. And PCIT is just, they can say that, but that ain't going to happen. That's not the model. And I think that the reason why that's really resonated in child welfare is because the child welfare system is not primarily concerned about behavior problems, are they? What they're concerned about is parent-child relationships and risks of omission, parents who don't pay attention or aren't, responsive to their kids, or parents who are coercive or violent or threatening with their kids. So I think that what people liked was that PCIT is really known as focusing on enhancing parental warmth and closeness with their kids, and that the result of that is better behaved kids. And I think that really was very meaningful, because there's so much concern about bonding, attachment, et cetera, et cetera. And I think most of us would say, well, I mean, in terms of interventions for bonding problems or attachment problems, well, what are they? They're parent-child interventions, and of which PCIT is a beautiful example. So what these guys set in motion was not just, by the way, the adoption of PCIT as an intervention that the child welfare system picked up on, but we now have a number of other of these parent management programs, all of which are effective for behavior problems, now being extended into, and we have data showing that they actually not just work to reduce behavior problems, but they address child welfare outcomes, meaning that families who get these interventions are less likely to come back into the child welfare system, which is a big deal, because that is really the goal of the child welfare system, to give people the help they need so they don't come in to the government's attention for not taking care of their kids right. So you may be familiar with Triple P has a very interesting, and it's the results are so good, a lot of people are like, that can't be true. But they have did a study, a randomized trial in South Carolina, where counties were randomized to be control counties. Nothing happened there, or to get lots of people trained in Triple P. And it was a lot of different people in different settings, counseling programs, public health, all kinds of parenting programs. So really what they were looking at was not individual change. So they didn't evaluate any individual families. What they did was evaluate population level outcomes. And what they found was that child abuse reports, out-of-home placements, and emergency room visits were reduced. And actually what the real result was they didn't increase as much as the other counties. But in effect, they had a population level effect by making, having on child abuse, expanding the availability of an evidence-based parenting program in the community. And you can kind of see how that might happen. If every time a parent had trouble with their kids, everywhere they went, they ran into somebody who was actually doing the right stuff, giving them a program that worked, that could have a large effect. And that's a unique study of which, you know, of course it took, like all these things do, you know, years and years and years and millions of dollars, and we may not have a replication of it. We have this couple of studies of, as you know, randomized trials with PCIT showing that it reduces re-referral to the child welfare system, studies out of Oklahoma. There is Project SafeCare, which people may be familiar with. It's an intervention. It's a home-based intervention for neglect. It has three modules, but one of them is a parenting intervention, and it does live coaching, by the way, in the moment with the parents, and they're showing good results in reducing re-referral. And then there is Alternatives for Families, which is we like to think of it as the counterpart for the older crowd in terms of physical abuse and coercion. It's tested and shown to work for kids about 6 or 7 and up. And it's a parent-child CBT that, again, focuses on nonviolent, non-coercive parenting and family problem-solving skills and that sort of thing. So really, I think, Anthony, you and Cheryl, you know, making this argument led to, you know, not only a neat idea, but a lot of other people picking up on it and testing it out and finding out it works. And now we have, you know, for the child welfare system, not only programs that can be really effective for the consequences of child abuse, behavior problems in kids, but also for, as prevention of recurrence. And that is, you know, you can't really beat that. So what I would say that our science tells us about parenting interventions is we have a lot of winners. We really are in a great spot now because we don't have to take a one size fits all, or you have to have this program or that program. We can offer an array to a community, to an organization, to choose from. And of course, I think that a lot of people are going to choose PCIT for the younger set because it's, you know, you're the proof that you've chosen it. And there's got to be a reason for that. You know, your organization or you said, this makes sense to me. I want to know how to do this. I want to make sure our clients have this. Now, that kind of brings me, though, to the other side of this situation, which is, you know, okay, now we have this great setup. We have all these things at work. We don't need any more new interventions. I can tell you that. We don't need more people in the academy making up a whole new package that's a tiny little twist for a tiny little group. And I can tell you somebody's doing that every day because I read the journals, and now we have a new, we found out that CBT actually works for trichotillomania too. Those aren't new interventions. They're just new applications. So now we got the problem of we have things that work and they're not very available. Now, you guys in California, of course, are in a really nice position relative to a lot of other places in the country because of Davis and the training center and the investment in, you know, figuring out and having ways to get PCIT out broadly. That is not really true in most parts of the country. This is somewhat unique. And frankly, the reality is, you know, that PCIT, for let's say all the kids who would meet the criteria, is probably not available to every kid in every setting who should have access to something like this. It might be, and you know, if you Californians want to convince me that you have solved this yet another problem in the world, I'm happy to hear about it. But if you have, you need to let all of us in on it, because the real problems we're facing now with evidence-based treatments is not do we have them, it's how do we get them to all the places where they ought to be. And that turns out to be a lot more complicated. So there were a couple of really great articles in the last couple of years, I think that have, and I'm going to refer to both of them because they get us thinking, and that's the point of this talk, is to get people thinking. I don't have anything to tell you about PCIT, obviously, but so this is more the, you know, putting it into perspective. So Bruce Chirpita and gang he's at UCLA. He was in Hawaii, and he's kind of the grandfather of this whole idea about, hey, guess what? All these effective treatments are made up of components, and they're all sort of variations on the theme. And this paper basically talks about the problem we've got now is we've got too much. We got too many of these things and too many versions, and how are, you know, that it's sort of the downside of good news, which now we're in the dilemma of this choosing and how are we going to get them to people and that sort of thing. So what I'm interested in is basically reach. That means I'm interested in figuring out ways to reach more kids and families in need, even if what they get, you know, even if we can't get everyone to get these, you know, the full meal deal and the perfect version of it. I think once you know we have stuff that works, we have some of us, depending on your role, an obligation to see how far we can get that out to more kids. So I'm going to talk about a couple of the things that are kind of hanging us up a little bit now, and two that specifically relate to PCIT that I want you guys to get on. That's really the point of this talk. But the package thing means, what I mean by that is the particular combination, order, and amount of time spent on whatever the internal components are. So every one of the brand names has come up with, you know, you do this first, and you do it for this number of times, and then you do this, and that kind of thing. Now, there are a lot of advantages to packages, because, you know, basically, we know it's the package that works, and we know it's the package that's been tested, not little pieces of it. We know definitely we have very strong evidence that sticking to the package will produce better outcomes, that when people don't follow the program, they tend to drift back to the non-specific things that don't really make a difference for people. And for a clinician, in a certain way, it's a great deal because it's a roadmap. You know, do this, then do that, do it this way. Now, there are some downsides to packages, which are not always fully discussed. When people start talking evidence-based, they always focus on the package as a package, but that's not really telling this whole story about what a randomized trial proves. A randomized trial, which basically that's when you know, the only difference between the two groups is one gets the intervention and one doesn't, so that you know it's the intervention accounting for differences. But in randomized trials, of course, it's not true that everyone who gets the tested intervention gets better and no one in the comparison group gets better. That's not what studies prove. What they're really saying is overall, the group who got the tested intervention got more better than the group that didn't. Which means that, of course, some kids who never got it, who got a control condition, a non-specific condition, they got better too. And you all know how that can be true, because lots of us feel like we've helped people even though we weren't giving them a proven packaged intervention, because some people get better for lots of different reasons. So, and you have people who got the test intervention who didn't really benefit by it. And I don't know exactly what your rate of improvement is in overall, you know, what percentage of kids benefit. You have people who got all the benefit they were ever going to get after half of it. They never got a single point on a behavior scale better after that. So the randomized trial doesn't prove everybody has to get this intervention to get any improvement. So what we know is there's variability in how much people need, which components they need, what, and all of that. But we don't have it nailed down to the degree that we could say, well, use your own personal judgment on it. Obviously, you know, clients are different in their level of need and how fast they pick up on things. And there's some ingredients to these interventions that we don't even know that they're accounting for anything. And I'll just give you an example from TFCBT, which is a whole different intervention. TFCBT, as those of you who might do it know, before you get to the trauma narrative part of the intervention, there's an extended period. It's not very long because evidence-based interventions never are, but where the kids are taught various emotion regulation skills. And the theoretical rationale for that is, well, before you start having kids talk about the trauma, you need to give them skills to manage their emotional reactions, because of course that's what TFCBT is for. It's for PTSD, which basically means distress at remembering. So it's a very good rationale. But there are several other versions of cognitive behavioral interventions that focus on trauma that aren't the brand name one, and they don't do that. They just go pretty much right to the trauma narrative part of it, the talking about it, the putting it into perspective. So in fact, it isn't all that clear that those steps that are part of TFCBT are always necessary for every kid. When I first read one of the other versions of it, which looks almost exactly the same except it doesn't have those emotion regulation sessions, I emailed the authors and said, well, why is, I'm interested to hear about it. And they said, well, we just didn't find that kids needed it all the time. I work with adults. Half of our clinic is adults, and we're dealing, you know, we do prolonged exposure, which is a therapy for PTSD, and essentially you're going to the actual exposure, reliving it with thoughts and feelings by the second session. So this is not intended as a criticism of TFCBT or of the component elements that people put in their packages. It's just making a point that they all might not be necessary, or they might not be the things that actually drive your results. The other downside, of course, is all these packages target one outcome, basically. Now, they can have a benefit on some others, which I'm going to talk about in a second, but you know, all of the ones, the parent management ones, their primary target is behavior problems. They're not targeting other mental health conditions that kids might have. TFCBT, that targets peak post-traumatic stress. Now it turns out it has a pretty good effect on depression as well, but the packages are not designed to have multiple targets. So, coming to the PCIT example, there's two things that I'm really anxious to see, and I haven't seen it yet. PCIT, to really, in the organized versions of PCIT, it'll take on a little bit. One is that it looks pretty clear to me from what research we do have, which are the studies out of Oklahoma, showing that PCIT reduces re-referral to child welfare. Well, guess what? If you jump in the studies, they have shown that PCIT by itself does not do that for child welfare families without a motivational enhancement intervention that comes first. So in other words, as far as I can see, the science wouldn't support any of us saying, if you send this family to me who's physically abused their child, I can tell you that this intervention is going to lower the chances of them coming back in the child welfare system. Because without the motivational enhancement, they did not find the result. And they tested it the right way. So I'm not, and I've tried to get this going a little bit, but I'm not PCIT, so it's kind of like me knock, knock, knocking on the door, and I'm knock, knock, knocking again, which is PCIT as a movement or an organizational thing, where's the responding to this finding? See, this is an example of a package that needs another component to have an effect on that particular outcome. You may be able to, PCIT is going to reduce the behavior problems. That's pretty straightforward. But re-referral for physical abuse, without this add-on component, I don't think we have the science to support it. I mean, and we actually have some science that says it doesn't do that without the motivational enhancement. So I'm interested to see, see something developed. Now, the study used a six-session self-motivational thing. I've talked to Mark Chaffin, who's the principal investigator. He doesn't think we need to be adding on six sessions before PCIT to get the result that came out of this. The only reason they had the six session thing was because the study was comparing PCIT to usual care, and they had a six session introduction to the usual care. Now, to my mind, that's really odd, because what's the average number of sessions people go to? Somewhere around six. And I'm thinking, well, if you're having six sessions to get ready to have the intervention, maybe people will be done. But so I'm not arguing that what people are saying, we should have a six-session intro, and that would be really tough to pull off in terms of reimbursement, all kinds of complications. But really, the science for motivational enhancement does not support six sessions worth of it. It really supports more like a half an hour worth of it. Now, in my conversations with PCIT people, what I hear back is, oh, well, we do that. Well, maybe you do, but that's not clearly specified that I'm aware of as an element of the delivery of PCIT. And I know there are psychoeducation or didactic sessions that precede the active training, but motivational enhancement is not psychoed. Motivational enhancement is a whole world unto itself of very specific skills that are used to get ambivalent people to choose change. And it isn't just piling up the information about this is why it would be good for you. In fact, that is not actually effective with people who are ambivalent. That basically, they'll start coming up with all the reasons why they don't need to change in that context. So I would like to, and this is quite a relevant issue in my state, because now we have a law preferring evidence-based practices in child welfare and mental health. And we would like to take a position, we want to capitalize on that and say, okay, if you have a physical abuse case, your default should be PCIT right now, because PCIT does have evidence for physical abuse re-referral, whereas the other effective parent management training interventions at the individual level do not. But if it's not being delivered with this motivational enhancement, I can't make that argument, because that wouldn't be evidence-based. So I'm interested to get you guys who are influential on it. Now, you providers, you got to wait for the bigs to tell you what it is they want you to do and all that jazz, but I'm just taking advantage of an opportunity here to sort of crack the whip that we need to see that, because it's going to be important when you get into these public policy things where you're telling people they have to do certain things. We got to have the support for it. Now, there's another area where I think PCIT, again, where it has to do with the packages, the way, in part of the pack, I just addressed the issue of an element of the package. Here's another example of it, which is the target. So all these EBPs have a target, and PCIT has not been designed to target internalizing problems in kids. But interestingly, we're getting some evidence that it actually affects internalizing problems as well, depression and anxiety. And I think this is your slide. Would that be right? That would be yours. You feel free to explain what it says, but or tell me if I go wrong on it. But there's a paper on PCIT affecting depression in young kids. and on the Davis sample showing that kids who got PCIT got reductions on the TCYC? Which is a parent report measure that includes assessment of post-traumatic stress and anxiety symptoms. Now, the idea that a parent-mediated intervention would work for internalizing problems in little kids is not actually new. A number of the evidence-based interventions for anxiety in kids are parent-mediated, and that turns out to be, you know, and they've been shown to work. But I have a question about this. I mean, I think it's fantastic. In my mind, the fewer interventions that families have to go to get the result they need, that's an evidence-based principle. People shouldn't have to be going to 2 and 3 and 4 and 5, or like the case I consulted on the other day at a staffing where the parent had basically, I counted up 10 interventions on the list, of which there was a long list, non-compliant. And she, you know, she'd failed PCIT and she'd, you know, didn't go to this and didn't do that. And of course, and she was just our favorite kind of a gal, really hostile. And she basically, as I pointed out to them, I said, well, she's actually running the show here, as you might notice, because she's got you guys going. She hasn't done a darn thing, and she has her kids back, and, you know, your basic principles here. And I have to say, I will say that I basically, my recommendation, I said, you know, either close the case and just wait till it comes around again, or get rid of every single intervention that you've got on this list of mental health treatment and substance abuse treatment and anger management treatment and blah. And they wanted to double up. You know, if she's not going to one parenting intervention, why don't we ask her to go to 3? That should work. I said, get rid of all of them. Go back and do PCIT again, because that's the absolutely right intervention for that 4-year-old kid. And then I said, call Naomi Perry, because she's a miracle worker. And if it can be done, she'll do it. But so I'm concerned about the idea of how are we going to integrate this trauma business into PCIT? Because here's the thing I'm concerned about. We think, over in the trauma world, that really the active ingredient for trauma-focused therapy is exposure. Talking about what happened, coming up with a better way to think about it, and talking about it with your parent. Those are the elements. I can't see how you get there through PCIT. Now, I can see how you can reduce general anxiety, but I'm not persuaded at all that it's desirable for young children to not have a structured opportunity to face up to what happened, to learn to talk about it, that's exposure, and to have the opportunity to do that in a structured way with the parent. So if they're reminded later, or they have a question, or they have a concern about it, they have already had the groundwork laid that they can talk to the parent about it, and the parent and the child are on board with a narrative that's helpful. That, yes, that was a bad thing that happened, but, you know, we're going to go forward, you have strengths, I'm going to protect you, whatever it is. I'd like to see you PCIT people integrate a trauma narrative session or two into the service delivery model when kids have post-traumatic stress. I am not in favor of the idea, because now, what have we got now? Serial therapies. Right now, the option we have, if we want to be evidence-based, is, well, first they go to PCIT for 16 sessions, and after that, then we send them to TFCBT, and they get 12 sessions of that. That would be following the evidence-based package model. That's not the best way to go about it, because I believe it's true that a lot of the general anxiety type of problems are going to go down with kids through PCIT, and all they probably need is a session or two. Now, that's going to be a real problem for PCIT, because that's departing from your standard model and your delivery method and that sort of thing. But from a point of view about what's best for clients, we need that. We need the way to integrate some of these things so we don't put clients in the position of serial therapies that may not be fully necessary. So those are my two things that I would like to see PCIT do. Deal with the motivational enhancement issue for physical abuse cases and figure out how to, in a structured way, address the trauma-focused element that doesn't require just choosing another package for families. Now, the alternative, which is what other people, which is what is going to take hold and is going to have, I think, a much bigger impact, is going to be the overall modular approach, which is basically you pick and you mix and match in a systematic way, but you don't buy a package anymore. You don't adopt a standard brand that's going to require the serial delivery system. And this is John Weiss and his colleagues and Bruce Torpeda did a study, and they compared usual care in public mental health, usual care, serial treatment manuals, so one for anxiety, then one for depression, then one for behavior problems, with a modular approach that mixed and matched based on the individual presentation of the case. And not only did the mix and match, you know, come out with more favorable results than the serial packages, but the clinicians liked it much better and were much more likely to use it because they weren't required to follow a strict manual all the time. Now, PCIT doesn't lend itself one little bit to that whole idea, but this idea is going to take hold because it's a much more efficient way for an organization to address reach. So instead of having all these different little interventions, we can just have one approach that's going to cover our whole population. So it is important for the packaged models to figure out how and what adjustments can be made and stay true to the model, or basically become more niche as we develop a different kind of approaches that will extend more broadly. Now, the other side of the dilemma here, when you go beyond the packages, of course, is the brand name issue, because there's some packages like Helping the Noncompliant Child that's not part of a brand name corporation approach, where so anybody can go out and learn to do it, and they don't have to go through any steps or anything like that. So now we have the situation for the training and competency establishing, which is largely at this point driven by the companies. And again, there are advantages and disadvantages. And the advantages, of course, are like you have with PCIT, you have a very good infrastructure that can support the training. The materials are fantastic. There's access to ongoing QA and all that kind of thing. So those are the great advantages to it. But the problem of the brand names that organizations are now facing when they're now at the point where they're being told this is what you have to do in your whole organization, well, they're expensive. They tend to be very narrow, and they target a particular population with a particular problem. And you've got this infrastructure problem for organizations. Well, can we really have five different supervision groups and fidelity monitoring schemes? And, you know, and I'm like, I am a mental health center. I mean, I might be small, but we have to deal with all of this. And I'm like, forget it. That's not feasible. And you get these people sitting in the universities, and literally they'll say things like, well, that's just what you have to do. And I'm like, really? I'll tell you, we can outlast you in not doing something if it isn't feasible. So we really are, I think, somewhat at a crossroads of kind of thinking ahead to how do we address this kind of dilemma. I can't afford to have every intervention have a different supervision structure and fidelity and QA monitoring thing. I can't. And I don't think most programs are going to be able to do that. So we are going to need to have some really good creative thinking going on that doesn't require, I don't think we should require choosing. You know, we're only going to do this, we're not going to do that. But if I'm in an organization and I've got to decide how to deal with this, why should I choose PCIT? I mean, from your point of view, and it could be anything. You know, I mean, I'll tell you why I choose it. Naomi and all these nice people. I mean, we invested in it. We believe in it. We see it work. But if I were asked today to choose it, I might not. I might not, because it's a big investment. And it only reaches a relatively small percentage of all the people who come to our clinic. So we have adults and kids. And then not all kids have behavior problems. So I want to encourage and hope for more discussions about how to make this work in the bigger picture, not just in the individual picture of this one intervention. And I know Anthony has thought about that a lot in terms of how to make the dissemination process one that's more welcoming and more feasible for organizations, and that's why you have so much of it in California, is so much attention to that. Now the other area, and this, you guys are so far ahead on it, I don't need to belabor it just to make the point. This is the other great article that came out. And this has to do with delivery methods, you know, that only a very small percentage of kids who have mental health problems and needs actually get care, because we're stuck in a delivery model system, which is specialty programs that people have to go to. And most kids don't do that, even if they are available in the community. That isn't what people do. They don't go to specialty operations. So if we want to really reach the population, we're going to have to get creative about it. And of course, you guys are already out there on that. And I was really impressed at dinner last night with Chris. I know you're talking about home-based delivery. And Emma, you're talking about delivery in vans. And I know Anthony has showed me the iPad versions of at least coaching being done that way. But there's a paper came out last year showing you can treat behavior problems and anxiety in kids, so the parents get the intervention for the behavior problems, the kids directly get it by phone, and their results are as good as in the office interventions, which of course is really depressing to a lot of clinicians, because guess what it means? They don't need to know us, and they can still get better if you're over the phone. And I've heard a lot of people saying that can't be true, I don't believe it, but you know, but even if the effect size was smaller, you're still going to get a benefit by doing things remotely. And so we have lots of, you know, technology that we can be capitalizing on, Skyping and FaceTime and that sort of thing. Basically, telemedicine is what it comes down to. And it looks like it's a pretty good deal. And because of your delivery method, you guys are in an ideal position to be doing more of that. And I applaud you for your efforts to be out there experimenting. And this is the one paper I could find. You probably are more familiar than I am, but you know, showing that you can get results by doing PCIT over the phone. So PCIT has actually got empirical support for it. So another angle that, of course, I already learned that Anthony's all over, which is really fun this morning. That's what we were doing instead of getting the thing started on time, is the idea of, one of the ways of reaching more people is through this integrated behavioral health. So integrating behavioral health into primary care so that you are actually identifying kids and families who have needs and getting them the care right connected there. And there are data now showing that you can get really better compliance, better attendance, and good results through these integrated approaches. And it turns out that here at Davis, that the PCIT training group is trying to insinuate itself into the primary care people and help, you know, with the idea of developing methods of delivering PCIT through the primary care venue. That is going to be a part of the future, and healthcare reform is doing things in that way. So kudos to all of you. So that's really all I had to say, and the things I'm most interested in hearing how PCIT is going to address, of course, has to do with these two specific things about motivational enhancement and dealing with post-traumatic stress in the context of a PCIT delivery. And I just want to thank you so much for having an outsider like me come and talk to you, and have a great day and learn more about PCIT. Thank you.
Lift this up a little bit higher. We're going to take a break in a minute, but I just want to say thank you, Lucy, for coming and talking. One of the things I learned a long time ago is when you invite Lucy to come and talk, she tells you what she thinks. And that's clearly what we got this morning. I think she probably was talking to Clinton, Reagan, or maybe even Truman, and she told them what she thought. And she's very much an advocate for children. And I think that's one of the things that we need to stay focused on, because there's a lot of things that we do in our daily lives, but the bottom line is, what do we do to help family, that helps families? So with that, I think it is break time. Thank you for giving Ms. Berliner your attention, and we will take a break and come back in just a little while. Thank you.